This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
You're listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week. We're getting ready to wrap up our show, but we've got a great last guest that we wanted to get to. And just to kind of set it up, earlier this year, McKinsey pegged the price tag of a livable climate at $9.2 trillion a year. So that's the level of investment needed to reach the international climate goals of net zero emissions by 2050. And our next guest, Tim, has a guide to the risks and opportunities for investors as the world faces climate change.
Very pleased to have with us this afternoon Bruce Usher. He's professor of professional practice at Columbia Business School. He's also the author of his book, Investing in the Era of Climate Change. And I should note, full disclosure, he was my professor when I took a course from him all the way back in, what, maybe 2017, 2018
when
at Columbia Business School.
Climate change didn't exist, right?
Yeah, this was a cool class, Investing for Social Ventures. We got to like essentially serve as consultants for these startups and decide whether or not they would be awarded money. Professor Usher, great to have you with us this afternoon. How are you?
Oh, thank you for having me on the show, and nice to chat again.
It's good to have you with us. Hey, help us understand in a time where we're seeing global upheaval, the worst energy crisis that we've actually seen in decades, and investors are fighting for returns anywhere. How should they be thinking about investing when it comes to climate change?
Well, there's no shortage of volatility in the markets these days, but they should think about climate change from a longer term perspective. If they're looking for stable trends, it's going to be here with us for years, if not decades, and affecting businesses for decades to come, and therefore affecting investors and investor returns for years to come. Climate change is the macro trend of the next several decades. There's just no question about that.
So, okay, and I do feel like it's going through a reckoning. Tim and I talk about ESG, right? We've seen so much money, Professor Usher, go into this space, but we're getting to a point where people really want to understand what they're investing in and that money ultimately makes a difference when it comes to ESG metrics. But how do we make sure that investments that we make really are making a difference and are good for the climate?
Well, there's plenty of discourse around ESG these days, no question about that. And the challenge with ESG is the concept is very simple, right? It's simply saying that when you make an investment, you would normally look at financial metrics and management metrics and competition, all these other metrics. In addition, add to that analysis the environmental or social factors that are material to the company you're considering. If you're buying into real estate on the coast, you might want to think about floods and storms and the like, right? So that's ESG analysis. Very important from an investment perspective. It makes for better investment decisions. It doesn't have a tremendous impact, though, on addressing climate change, because what you're really doing is investing in companies that are doing better at managing climate risk. But those decisions don't necessarily reduce emissions of greenhouse gases. So if that's what you're focused on, and I think that's pretty important to be focused on it, there's really two strategies to consider. One is a thematic impact investing strategy. Pick a theme or a sector that contributes to addressing climate change, say renewable energy, solar, wind, or electric vehicles, and put some investments into that sector in a smart way to maximize your risk-adjusted returns and also contribute to reducing emissions of greenhouse gases. The other strategy that's unique to really high net worth or ultra high net worth individuals is take what's called impact first strategy. So here we're really focused on climate change and invest with that lens in mind. Now that means making very long-term investments and perhaps some additional risk, but some investors are willing to do that as well.
What I find a little puzzling in this day and age, in, you know, October of 2022, is the market has rewarded this year companies that are the antithesis of these climate friendly companies, you could argue, right? Oil and gas companies. I mean, you look at the best performing stock in the S&P 500 this year, Occidental Petroleum up 120%. Number for the first, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, and 10th companies that are the only, that are the best performing in the S&P 500, they are all oil, gas, natural resources companies. So what's an investor to do in this environment?
So two things to think about with oil and gas. First of all, they were, that was from very low price points a year ago, right? So the multiples on those companies are still very low. Secondly, many of those oil and gas companies are aware of climate change and aware of their business models and how they're going to change them. So Occidental Petroleum, as an example, has invested heavily in direct air capture and some other technologies to ideally reduce their emissions over time. So they're also thinking long term. I'm not saying whether their business model is the right one. Actually, we don't have much clarity on oil and gas strategies around climate change yet. But it's not as if those companies are ignoring the issue altogether. At least the vast majority of them are now taking action on that. That being said, you know, I said a few minutes ago, climate change is a long-term trend. And what we're seeing in the markets right now is short-term volatility, right? Oil, gas prices are up dramatically in the past year, and those stocks are going to do well in the short term.
But is there going to be, you know, it's interesting, on a day when we heard from Kathy Wood of ARK Invest, who obviously stresses disruption, innovation, you know, is there going to be this uncomfortable pivot? Forgive me for using the P word.
You have to drink now.
But is there going to be an uncomfortable pivot, at least in the public markets, as we do shift away from carbon-based fuels, as we move to alternative energy, more EVs, because we really are turning our backs on companies that have been so much a part of our public markets in some ways, and there will be new leaders in the market. So will there be some dislocation, some discomfort as that happens?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Look, climate change is two words, right? The second word is change.
Yeah.
And there's going to be environmental change, but there's also going to be a lot of change in business as this decarbonation takes place through the global economy. There are going to be companies that are winners and companies that are losers. There's just no question about that. From an investment perspective, the key question, of course, is who's going to win, who's going to lose. And here it gets a little challenging because in some sectors, the disruptive companies, new technologies, really have an advantage. I mean, just look at the automotive sector and Tesla just completely disrupted it. And we saw what happened to values both in Tesla and the competitors. Some other sectors, though, the incumbents have big advantages. And sectors where there's a lot of regulation or big balance sheets are required, for example, utility sector, you know, there were companies that have tried to disrupt utilities for a number of years now. NextEra took a look at what's going on, started investing heavily in renewables, is now the largest owner of renewable energy assets in the country, and more importantly, is the most valuable utility in the country today, one of the most valuable energy companies in utility. So, you know, picking those winners and losers as this transition happened, use the word pivot, I would use the word transition, but this change that's coming is critical.
How much do you watch? It's funny, when Tib and I were at Milken, was it in the spring?
Yeah.
You know, we spent so many of our conversations talking about the private markets versus the public markets. How much do you watch what's going on, especially when it comes to disruption, innovation, that pivot that's happening as we think about the climate? How much of what we really should be keeping an eye on is where those investments are going on in the private markets to give us an idea of who will be ultimately the leaders in the public markets in the years to come?
Absolutely. The private markets where a lot of the innovation occurs. That's where venture capital flows. That's where a lot of private capital is flowing from high net worth individuals. We should look at what's going on. Look at what Bill Gates and Breakthrough Energy Ventures are investing in. Look at what a number of the VC funds are putting into a thing I'll call climate tech. And let's see, you know, which of those become the winners in the various sectors. Sectors I would focus on, green hydrogen, whole new sector, could absolutely revolutionize a lot of industries today. Direct air capture, much riskier, much harder, but could revolutionize the way we address climate change. And then there are a whole lot of other technologies around energy storage and transportation. All early stage, not competitive commercially yet with the incumbent companies, but a lot of opportunity and promise there.
So don't make fun of I don't know, Rivian or like whoever's out there, right? We love you, Rivian. No, I'm just saying no view at all. But I mean, there's going to be stumbles, right, as we make this change.
Absolutely. Yeah, look, the parallel here is, you know, I teach at business school, right? And if we go back 30 years, when I graduated from business school, the big thing that came, and we didn't see it coming really, was technology. Technology changed all businesses, and we looked at technology. Even when we saw technology coming, it was often hard to know which companies were going to win. You know, Netscape was the biggest internet company there for a while and doesn't exist anymore. Google came along and it's still dominant. Those changes in the world of technology, and specifically digital technologies, have revolutionized business in so many ways and result in a lot of change. We look forward 30 years, that's climate change. Climate change is going to have a similar impact on businesses. And it's tough to predict which specific companies are going to come out on top.
Bruce, where is the drive going to come from when you think about investors, when you think about just business risk, or you think about the government? Is this something that these companies are going to do on their own, or does the government need to step in and create regulations that guide them?
Yeah, so this is an interesting moment. And the reason why I wrote the book now, I could have been working in the sector 20 years. I could have written it some years ago or waited a little longer. We're at a very interesting moment in time here because there's multiple drivers going at once, right? One driver is the physical risks of climate change are manifesting themselves. Increasingly, we're seeing climate change play out physically, and so that affects people. Consumers are starting to demand more sustainable products. Employees, they want to work for companies they believe are sustainable. These are all real trends, and there's a lot of academic research to show that these actually affect the businesses. Then you've got government stepping up more than ever. It's not consistent, particularly here with, you know, parties change. But the Inflation Reduction Act is by far the largest government support ever in this area, and that has big implications. And then the greatest change of all is around innovation. So we have products like solar and wind and electric vehicles that are revolutionizing industries and also really starting to bend the curve on emissions. I mean, here in the U.S., most people don't realize we actually peaked in our greenhouse gas emissions back in 2007. We actually are on a downward curve, not nearly quickly enough. We have to accelerate this transition. But this innovation and technologies is really making a big difference.
So we have about a minute or so left here, and there's a line in your story with a graphic or a picture. Investors should climate-proof their investments by mid-century in line with the recommendations of climate scientists. So I'm thinking about our investors, you know, people who are listening to this show, listening to you speak, listening to this interview. What's the takeaway at this point when they think about their investments and maybe their strategy, their time frame and the like?
So the initial reaction to that may be, well, mid-century is an awfully long time from now. It's almost three decades, and I'm gonna be pretty old. Hope I'm still here talking to you then. But investments are priced, they're valued on future cash flows and future expectations around the value in those assets in those companies. And it's becoming increasingly apparent that the world is going to decarbonize. By the way, whether or not governments make it happen is going to happen because climate change is basic physics when you get down to it. Physics are going to force us to do this. So you're looking at your investments, think about how they're going to be affected, not 30 years from now, but how they're going to get affected in the next couple of years as these changes really start to manifest themselves, and then reposition around that.
Fascinating. And I think just so relevant to so much going on, especially as we continue to see the impact of climate change and then think about how it plays certainly into investing strategy. Bruce Usher, thank you so much. Hopefully we can catch up with you soon again in the future. Professor of Professional Practice at Columbia Business School. Check out his new book, Investing in the Era of Climate Change. It is just out.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts. Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.